Section 2 of the bill is a prohibition on contracting with a platform, and that prohibition is lowered to younger than 14 years of age. It does not regulate the age verification methods, but still holds the platforms accountable if they allow a minor under the age of 14 on the platform. Section 3 relates to 14 and 15-year-olds and requires the social media platforms to prohibit 14 and 15-year-olds from entering into contracts with the platform unless the parent or guardian of the minor provides consent. If the parent does not provide consent, the social media platform is required to deny such accounts and to terminate any existing accounts in a similar manner as required in subsection 2.
This is Senator Erin Grawl, the champion of social conservatism in the Florida Senate, and she's been running the HB 1 and HB 3 on the Senate side. Remember, HB 1 was the social media age ban bill that requires you to be 16 to be on social media with some, protections, and then, but that's the main thing. If you're 14 or 15 or 13 or 12 or whatever, you could not be on social media at all. The governor vetoed that bill, but HB 3 was the one that required you to be 18 to have access to pornographic websites. They had merged the bills together. They had added HB 3 into HB 1, and then they passed it, and the governor vetoed it. So then what? Well, they're not going to override the veto of the governor. There's not enough people in the Senate to do that. But what they can do is they can resuscitate HB 3, bring it back with a massive revision that basically adds in all the provisions of HB 1 with some changes that the governor would approve of, and then run the age verification for porn bill with all the social media ban stuff inside of it, which is how they were doing. And as you heard, the main change, and as David had mentioned, we told you about this previously too, but the main change was that 14 and 15-year-olds would be allowed to be on social media with parental consent, and a couple of other provisions, but that was the main one. Here's an interesting side note to it. There's also a part of the bill now that says that if courts deem social media dangerous, it would revert back to 16 like the original bill had.
Section 4 speaks to whether or not the court enjoins the provisions related to parental consent for 14 and 15-year-olds. If the court does enjoin those provisions, then it requires a prohibition on allowing 14 and 15-year-olds from entering into contracts with the platforms.
Which she explained later really is the goal. Like, they want the court to weigh in so that they can have basically a judicial finding in order to say that, these things are really, really bad. That's the whole idea, is to expand the opportunity to create a body of evidence that can be used to justify whatever future legislation might make more sense even than this.
Folks that I've been working on this with, and I think that what is so pervasive in this is the addictive features in order to addict children early and keep them engaged in the platforms. The goal is really to get the addictive features in front of a court and have the court look at the way in which this content is being manipulated in order to rewire the brains of our children. And is that harmful enough? If it is harmful enough to allow the state to intervene and say, is parental consent, can a parent consent to the harm?
Right. And that's the balancing act here, right? On the one hand, social media is harmful with some benefits, but mostly it's harmful. On the other hand, you have parental rights, parental authority, and individual freedom, right? And so you have to balance these two against each other. The original Senate bill that the governor vetoed balanced them at the age of 16, as the 15-16 split being the difference. This new bill balances at 13-14. That's more of a carve out. That's more of a balancing in favor of parental rights or individual expression, right? I mean, I'm in favor of this over what we have today, but I thought this was a massive cave and a massive reduction in the significance of the bill. Bobby Powell asks, I thought actually kind of a good question. He says a lot of silly things in the Senate, but he asked a good question. He said, well, okay, but what about content that somebody posted when they were not yet old enough to have posted it? Like, if a 15-year-old with permission, what happens to their stuff from 2 years ago? Or a 16-year-old just posts stuff that, is 3 years old. Does it delete any of the old stuff from when they weren't under this bill really eligible to be posting or owning an account? And the answer is no, it doesn't have any retroactivity to that. And then there was a question that got asked by Tina Polsky, who, again, often says really silly things, but I thought actually asked a very good question about the pornography access age kind of question. We'll get to that in just a second. Jake's got traffic on the fives. Jake?
This traffic report is brought to you by Frontier Motors. I am not seeing anything out there on our roadways to tell you about. I-10 and I-110 are at posted speeds. If you're on Highway 98 through Gulf Breeze and Navarre, not seeing anything slowing you down there. Same for Highway 90 coming out of Milton through Pace. No problems there. Chase Street, Gregory Street, Garden Street, Palafox, all checking in clear. If you see anything out there slowing you down, you can always call or text our traffic tip line, 437-1620. Frontier Motors, the only dealer Dave Ramsey recommends in Pensacola. Frontier Motors on Beverly Parkway. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jake. Back to the State House yesterday, the Florida Senate in discussion of HB 3 now, which is the revamped 1 and 3 melded together after the governor vetoed HB 1 on social media. And Tina Polsky, I thought, asked a really good question about specifically the pornography age verification slice of the bill, because that slice has received, I think, unanimous support kind of every time it shows up, something that seemed to be controversial a year ago, but with other states doing the same thing. You know, you're supposed to be 18 to see porn. Let's require you to have age identification in order to see porn online. That's the idea. And she says, but aren't there kind of a lot of ways to find porn?
The section on pornographic materials, is it true that any age child can Google or use the internet to find all sorts of inappropriate pictures, movies, what have you?
Yes. The answer is yes. And so Erin Grahl misunderstood the question. She thought that this had something to do with the social media side. Tina Polsky didn't push the issue, but yeah. If a kid's looking for porn, they're going to be able to find it. They may not be able to find as much of it. They may not be able to find the most disgusting variants of it. They may not be able to go to a website that, you know, has it all, so to speak. But you can still find stuff that kids should not have access to easily online. And this bill doesn't solve for that. But again, the question is, do you say the thing shouldn't be done just because it doesn't have a 100% success rate? Or do you say that, you know, 70% is better than zero? And that's what I say. I mean, most legislation is, you know, 70% is better than zero. Very few pieces of legislation ever get to 100%. So in the discussion, it's basically a question of where do you balance the line? And Tina Polsky, and it's kind of interesting because Democrats who historically in Florida have been on the losing side of the parental rights argument, you know, Republicans have been the ones to talk about, you know, pronouns and gender identity and reproductive services and parental, not just information, but parental consent for a lot of these things. And Democrats have been the ones to say, no, teachers know best and students know best, and you have to protect people from their kids. Now we're on the other side where Republicans are saying, no, social media is so dangerous for kids that no parent really should be allowed to opt in for their kids, or at least, you know, in this bill that the age should be pretty high and that only for a couple of years should they be allowed to opt in. And Democrats are making the point that this is a violation of parental rights.
For the government to come in and say, no, we've decided the age is 14, I still think runs into all the constitutional problems we discussed and the general issue of parents making the decision.
And as Senator Bobby Powell says,
at some point, parents have to learn how to be parents. And we as a government don't have the ability, and I tell people all the time when I do town halls, I cannot knock on your door and make sure that your child goes to school every morning. I wasn't elected to come and run your household. But sometimes I think that we start passing legislation that we believe is well-intentioned, but it really starts to become invasive into a person's household in terms of what they need to be doing.
So as a general principle, true. I mean, as a particular fact, false. You know, you have truancy officers, or at least you used to, and maybe they don't anymore. I don't know. I thought there was some enforcement mechanism for that. But yeah, intrusion into people's private lives is not something that, generally speaking, any good American loves. But Republicans think that it's appropriate in certain ways, and Democrats think that it's appropriate in certain ways. And nobody believes 100% in parental authority because, for example, you know, nobody believes that parents should be able to sell their kids online to predators, which horrible, terrible parents really do. And they sometimes facilitate that behavior through social media. Or predators find their kids through social media. That's not all. That's not everybody's experience. But that's kind of the point in this case, is that we all believe in some limits to parental authority. Where does that line fall when it comes to this particular product? Do you trust parents with this and simply say, ho-hum, they need to learn to be better parents? Well, they're not being better parents. It's sort of the classic example of when people misbehave, they invite government restrictions. You know, if 16-year-olds all behaved well after midnight, there wouldn't be curfews. Not all 16-year-olds do behave well after midnight. Enough of them misbehave, and that invites a curfew. Miami Beach has had spring break for years and years and years and years and years, and last year you had shootings and stampedes and all kinds of things happen, and now they've actually gone to social media to advertise against spring break, and they're trying to discourage it with incredible crackdowns, lockdowns, checkpoints, and all that kind of stuff. Why? Because a few bad actors or enough bad actors invite government restriction of everybody's freedom. Well, parents didn't do a good enough job of protecting their kids from social media, and now Florida says, we're going to help. Because as you heard, you know, David play, the impact on kids from social media is quick and awful.
Accounts were created for 13-year-old users. Here's what the algorithm recommended. Within 2.6 minutes, suicide self-harm content. Within 8 minutes, eating disorder content. And 82% of online sex crimes against minors started when the perpetrator used the social networking site to gain information and introduction. Senators, I would say we have to do something, and we can't stand by any longer and allow them, these companies, to own our children with this terrible content.
That's the idea, the impact that they're having. And by the way, I thought, you know, Rosalind Osgood, who's a Democrat, who is a former school board member and I think a teacher, but I know she was a school board member for a long time. I thought she actually had one of the most poignant comments on this subject yesterday.
I feel very strongly that social media came and we just turned our kids over to it. We just gave them all free access to social media without any restrictions, without any regulations.
That's it. We basically turned our kids over to it and said, here you go, good luck. And now an awful lot of people are saying, that did not work out great for us. That did not work out great for our kids. And maybe it's bad enough that we ought to have some government restriction, which is what Florida and other states have tried to do this. Nobody seems to have found a way to do it that holds up to court yet, but we're not going to quit just because we haven't found a way to do it that doesn't hold up to court yet. 623 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Join Lori from Davis Hardware and U-Haul on Pep Talk tomorrow at 10:30 for Davis Hardware and U-Haul's first show, talking about what makes Davis Hardware your go-to place for those hard-to-find items. Air conditioner filters of every size, hard-to-find fasteners and plumbing connectors, nails by the piece, and pest control options that work specifically for rats.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Physical activity can make your life better. Spring is a great time to begin reaching your movement goals. The Florida Department of Health in Santa Rosa County is celebrating National Minority Health Month and promoting breastfeeding for all babies by holding the All Moms, All Babies 1 Mile Color Walk or Run on April 13th. This free, family fun event will be held at the Baghdad Mills Site Park beginning at 10 a.m. Call 850-983-5250 to pre-register or for more information, visit health.gov/moveyourway for tips on how to get active.
Verus Health Partners knows there are plenty of options when it comes to insurance. Owners Pam and Keith Giles will help guide you to choose the best plans for you and your family. As a veteran-owned independent health and life agency in Pensacola, their clients range from moms and dads on Medicare to individuals, families, business owners, and veterans who are looking for answers. They are researchers, educators, and advocates who take pride in guiding clients to become smart healthcare shoppers. Contact them at verushp.com. Verus Health Partners.
A-R-G-O-S, Argos! Go Argos!
Go Argos!
I'm Claire Stewart with the University of West Florida. Summer is just around the corner, and we are thrilled to offer Explore Summer Camps to provide weeks of fun and education for your school-age children to enjoy. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel as we share the many camps available this year and how you can get your camper signed up. Tune in this Thursday at 9 a.m. to learn more. That's Thursday on the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3.
Pensacola right now with Joe and Austin. It's like headline news for radio every day, 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
You do nothing. You are nothing. You sit in here all day and play that sick, repulsive, electric twanger.
We'll be right back.
That has to be one of the all-time greatest videos. Also, because, you know, the dad in the Twisted Sister We're Not Going to Take It video is Niedermeyer from Animal House. The guy who was riding the pony that got, you know, deceased. So, because he kind of yells in that movie, and I was watching it the other day, and I'm like, oh, wait. And sure enough, same guy. Jake's got our traffic on the fives. Jake?
This traffic report is brought to you by Barberry Plumbing. I'm not seeing any issues out there on our roadways right now. I-10 and I-110 are at posted speeds, not showing any slowdowns on Pine Forest or in Carr City. No delays on Burgess or Olive. If you're coming out of Milton this morning through Pace on Highway 90, not seeing anything slowing you down there. Longleaf Drive, Mobile Highway, no problems. Gregory Street, Garden Street, Palafox checking in clear. If you do see anything out there on our roadway slowing us down, you can always call or text 437-1620. But when it's time to call a plumber, call the best of the bay winner, Barberry Plumbing, at 477-8782. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jake. If you're in the market for that next vehicle because your relationship with your current vehicle has gone south. When you first get a car, you're like, yay! And then after a while, you got like, yay! And then after a while, you're like, ah! And then eventually you're like, ooh. Right? And if you're in that kind of odd ooh phase of your relationship with your car, start looking, you know, because it's okay. It's allowed. You can trade up. That's the idea. Okay, you trade in the old one, you get a newer one. Frontier Motors, good selection of good quality used cars, about 300 on the lot, all different brands and makes and models. You can sample them side by side and compare them. They're going to typically be cars that are about 1 to 3 years young with low miles and great condition and good prices. And you can find the one that'll make you go, ooh, again. Because you spend a lot of time in your car. You ought to not hate it. You ought to not endure your car. So Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years, behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Former President Trump is the winner in the North Dakota Republican caucus. The contest in North Dakota was the last before Super Tuesday. The state awards 29 GOP delegates towards the National Party's convention. Texas's controversial new immigration law is likely headed to the U.S. Supreme Court. It allows local police there to arrest anybody they believe crossed the border illegally. It had been blocked by a federal judge. That ruling has now been overturned. A federal appeals court giving the federal government 7 days to file a case with the Supreme Court. And police in New York say they've busted a 10-year-old boy for subway surfing. That's riding on top of a moving subway car. Police say the...
Arrested or given a medal? I just want to be clear. I heard you right.
Well, he probably should get a medal, I'll tell you. Police say he was on top of the roof of an A train that was on elevated tracks on Sunday, and officials say that's the youngest person in recent memory to ever be caught doing that. So that,
I just don't think it's a fair contest. You said he's 10?
10 years old, yeah.
A small body gives him an unfair advantage.
You think so?
Yeah, I think if it's a competitive regulated sport, you can't award him the medal because, you know, he's too small. It's not fair.
Yeah.
Somebody like me, you know, unfair.
He's never seen the movie Speed.
That's right.
He didn't know how dangerous that is.
That's right.
David, I bet you'd be a good subway surfer. You're wiry.
I don't know.
Wiry.
I don't know
wiry.
How to take that. As a compliment, thanks? I suppose. Yeah.
Absolutely. Of course.
That's me. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 629 here on News Radio 92.3. Oh, first over-the-counter birth control pill is going to begin shipping to stores, so you will not have to get a prescription anymore for the basic. It's just progestin. It doesn't have any estrogen in it, so it's the primitive low-dose pill. I mean, the real primitive pills are high-dose, but it's the intermediate, the low-dose single drug pill. Generally speaking, I'm not a big fan of contraceptives. There's a lot to be said about this topic. Contraceptives are different than, you know, for example, abortion, but they're in the same genre. And the impact that it has on lifestyle and behavior and marriage and reproduction and a whole host of things. But if a product is going to be legal and instead of having to go to a doctor to get a prescription, which you can get from any doctor, basically, this actually makes sense to me. Again, in the context of not a fan of it, but if you're going to make it available, make it available. I think it's actually a fairly sensible development, even though I think it's a generally bad development for the culture.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster. It's Super Tuesday with primaries or caucuses happening in 15 states.
The biggest prizes are in California with 169 GOP delegates and Texas with 150. Former President Trump enters Super Tuesday, the far and away frontrunner and delegate leader. He can't secure the nomination tonight, but could haul in enough to force the last remaining major Republican candidate, Nikki Haley, to end her bid.
Fox's Jared Halpern. There's a UN report about sexual violence committed during the Hamas terrorist attacks in Israel October 7th and against hostages held since.
Hamas has denied any of that took place, but the United Nations mission believes sex assaults occurred in at least three locations, including the Nova Music Festival.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. Debris fell a mile away after explosions at a wholesale distribution building in Clinton Township, Michigan. The fire there is under control now. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3, 65 degrees. Rain across the area this morning. Escambia County deputies say they're looking for a man suspected of trafficking enough fentanyl into the area to kill everyone in Escambia County plus 25,000 visitors. Officials say 42-year-old David Denver Holland is wanted on drug trafficking and other charges. Now, this all comes after deputies say they attempted to stop a vehicle they believe Holland was driving on I-10, but that vehicle fled. It was then later found at a residence on West Hope Drive. The man was seen fleeing the area on foot. Deputies say they searched the vehicle. They found a firearm, 590 grams of methamphetamine, 170 grams of cocaine, and nearly 700 grams of fentanyl. If you have any information on Holland's current location, you are asked to contact the Escambia Sheriff's Office or call Crime Stoppers. As Florida's legislative session winds down, the bill calling for statewide term limits for county commissioners appears to be dead, despite the best efforts of State Representative Michelle Salzman.
Members, term limits discourage the development of political classes that prioritize re-election over effective governance. Officials may focus more on serving the public rather than securing their own political future.
Salzman's bill had terms capped at 8 years. Companion legislation in the Senate had 12. While the bill was able to pass through multiple committees, ultimately, House leadership elected to not include that bill on the full House calendar this week. And, of course, the legislative session ends on Friday. State Representative Alex Andrade says he's been dealing with angry phone calls after discussing a critical race theory bill in Tallahassee last week.
What would be a good lesson for Alex to learn? Perhaps somebody can come to his house and take himself and his wife and his entire family, you know, all of them. And why not stop there? Just take everybody of his nationality and just put them into slavery.
Andrade posting that phone call to his X account. He says it's been an effort by Democrats to spread lies about him and put words into his mouth last Friday. Andrade made this argument in Tallahassee.
Members, no one is saying that slavery benefited or was good or had any positive side effects. There is only one way to teach about slavery in Florida, and that is that it was evil.
During that discussion, Andrade also said black history needs to be taught accurately in the state of Florida, including that some slaves were paid for their work. Well, after doing away with curbside recycling last year, the city of Pensacola going back for round two. On March 1st, the city officially put out a request for proposals for third-party operators.
Hopefully, again, we've got one of those options. We could continue to do some assisted drop-off as well. But a lot of the direction that we're going to go with a new era, a 2.0 of recycling in the city, is going to be determined by what happens with these RFPs.
And since November, the city has allowed residents to drop off certain items at designated spots. Mayor D.C. Reeves said last summer that while ECUA maintained the citywide recycling program, about 50% of the materials gathered were not actually able to be recycled. It is 6:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with Jake.
Well, no accidents are being reported right now by FHP. Looking at the traffic map here, we do have a little bit of slowdown on Highway 98 eastbound in Navarre, starting just after the causeway. stretching from there about up to the Walmart Supercenter there. But I don't see an accident reported there, just a little bit of slow traffic. But other than that, around town, we're looking great. I-10 and I-110 are at posted speeds. Highway 90 coming out of Milton through Pace, I don't see any problems there. Highway 29 south through Cantonment is clear. Davis Highway is good from the I-10 overpass through Creighton, Brenton, Fairfield. And we're looking good from 12th Avenue through to Palafox and W Street. If you do see anything out there slowing you down, you can always call or text our traffic tip line. That phone number is 437-1620. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, Jake. Now our Channel 3 weather forecast.
A very wet start to our morning. 90% chance of rain through the morning hours. Becoming spotty in the afternoon, high near 68. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 60 degrees. For Wednesday, partly cloudy skies, high near 75. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 58 degrees. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
65 across the area, rain. Our next news at 7 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. And your money now. This morning, the market futures trending down. The Dow futures right now are down 48 points at 38,974. S&P futures down 11.75 at 51.2650, and the NASDAQ futures down 91.75 this morning. Congressional leaders releasing the language of a massive government funding bill with plans to pass it and avoid a government shutdown ahead of Friday's deadline. The over 1,000-page legislation would keep the government open until October and includes six bills negotiated between the House and Senate. And Apple being hit with a $2 billion fine by the European Union over music streaming. An investigation into Apple started back in 2020 after Spotify filed a complaint saying it and other music streaming providers had been forced to pay a fee for purchases made using Apple's in-app payment system.
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions. Tune in Thursday at 10:30 and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
Throughout our history.
But now the Soviet Union has taken a radical and an aggressive new step. It's using its great military power against a relatively defenseless nation.
Presidents have delivered the annual State of the Union Address.
This administration declares unconditional war on poverty in America.
President Biden will give his third State of the Union Address Thursday at 8 p.m., along with the Republican rebuttal by Alabama Senator Katie Britt on News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Hurricane Sally, like you said, the documentation is unbelievable. It's the most amount of documentation that I've ever seen for debris. This is the first storm that we've done it this way. And, you know, the reason why we're in this situation, I want to make sure everyone knows, is not because of anything that our people did or didn't do or anything that our contractor did or didn't do. They did exactly what we asked them to do.
This is David Bryant. He's the internal auditor for the Escambia County Public School District, and he gave a presentation yesterday at a special call meeting for the school board that was essentially all about how FEMA has failed to pay us for, you know, debris collection and removal after Sally, to the tune of $500 to more than that $1,000, because they are just dragging their feet and being difficult. And he went through a very, what I found very informative about what we're doing and what they're not doing. And anyway, I wanted to share it with you because it's frustrating, but it starts to help you understand this process that, of course, can be so relevant to our community.
You take a branch and you take multiple pictures of the tree and you take the GPS and you do a map of it and you say exactly what you did, and then you take multiple pictures with tape measures to show how big it is, and then you have after photos, and then you have an independent person separate from the contractor that signs off on that, and then the contractor signs off on it, and then you have our assistant director of maintenance that reviews all of that before we pay them, and you do that for every single branch. It's no wonder we pay $150 per branch.
What?
Because I would imagine that 75% of that is documentation cost.
Unbelievable. And you know this is true if you've ever seen, like, the trimmer trucks that go along, and after the, and they've got, it's not just the truck itself, but it's got all of the barcodes and the person driving behind them in the car verifying everything and making sure there's no fraud going on, because fraud prevention is such a big part of it. But we're spending 75% of the cost of limb and tree removal is just documentation of the limb and tree removal. That's insane. I mean, at a certain point, you got to kind of say, oh, hell, just let them commit fraud. I mean, the fraud would cost less than the verification to prevent the fraud, right?
And so, and you can imagine that for the 3,000 or so individual branches and stumps and trees doing all of that paperwork. We have some of these invoices that are so large that I have to divide them up into 4 different PDF files just so I can upload them to FEMA servers. It's that much information.
Like for one action he's talking about.
In the past, when we've had debris, we've had issues with FEMA on cost. And so we've had to argue back and forth with them on cost. This time it's a different animal. It's a bit unreasonable. When you have dead hanging limbs on a tree at the entrance to a school, and FEMA says, well, that doesn't pose a threat. And, FEMA's own definition of an immediate threat is there's a risk of damage or danger for a 5-year period after the event. And so it's hard to believe that anyone could be okay with having 100-pound dead limbs hanging over an entrance where kids walk in every single day, or along a car pickup line.
So the school district is trying to do its job, is trying to keep the property that it owns safe for kids, something that if it got wrong, we would all be furious about. And after Sally doing this and documenting this and submitting it to FEMA, and FEMA's like, nah, you just don't know what you're doing.
Amount of assumptions that FEMA made and the subjectivity without even asking the question, or when you answer the question, they just kind of ignore it. The example I gave is a true example. They go onto Google Maps, they look at the environmental center and say, that's a forest. We don't pay you to cut down trees in forest. And we're like, that's an environmental research center. That is where there are miles and miles of trails, and you can't have falling branches over a trail, and you can't have that over dead trees laying in the path. And it got to the point where even I sent my staff out, went to the GPS coordinates that the contractor had marked, and we just took pictures, showed right on the trail.
And the point is that over all of this time, as they submitted and got denied from FEMA, there's like no way to satisfy them, basically.
Yeah, FEMA doesn't like to be questioned. And so, especially once they've kind of made an initial ruling. And we work really hard with them prior to them making any determination, because they do have a process where they will review something and then they'll ask you questions. So you can kind of see a path that they're going down.
And the part of the problem is that even FEMA is not obeying the law itself in the way it's failing to respond in a timely manner to these requests, which is, look, I understand FEMA's got a big task to do, but that doesn't get it out of the legal obligations for timeliness.
We submitted our original appeal request. It was April 2022. And FEMA has 90 days to respond to you. That's in the law. 90 days. They got back to us in August 2023. So, 16 months after we submit our appeal, and that's common.
And of course, the problem is, like, if you're submitting responses to them, you have 60 days and it's firm. 61 days, you're done. FEMA's got 90 days and 16 months, they're still fine.
There is a reason why we didn't get our last Hurricane Ivan check until the summer of 2022. Or 2020, 16 years after the fact, because they will issue an opinion, and if you don't file your appeal within 60 days, it's automatic grounds for denial. Automatic. They won't even consider it. And so we're held to that standard. But the law says thou shalt reply and give us an opinion within 90 days. There's no repercussions for them. And so you just have to kind of sit and wait.
And basically FEMA is behaving like the bad actor insurance company. You know, deny, deny, deny. And then eventually maybe you can persuade them, you know, to do what they're supposed to do. We'll come back to this in a second. Again, this is David Bryant. He is the internal auditor for the school district, talking to the school board yesterday in a special called meeting about whether they would have to go through or choose to vote to go to arbitration with FEMA over the damages from Hurricane Sally. Jake's got our traffic on the fives. Jake?
All right, this traffic report is brought to you by Discover. Still seeing a little bit of slowdown on Highway 98 eastbound in Navarre, starting just after the causeway, stretching past the Walmart now. Not seeing an accident, just slow traffic as you roll through that area. Also, just popping up on the map here, I-10 westbound coming out of Milton, going over Escambia Bay. We do have some debris in the roadway. That's I-10 westbound, so just use caution heading through that area. Otherwise, around town, we're looking great. I-10 and I-110 are at posted speeds. Looks like Highway 29 south through Cantonment is clear. Chase Street, Gregory Street, Garden Street, Palafox, all checking in good. If you do see anything out there, let us know, 437-1620. Discover wants everyone to feel special with live 24/7 customer service. Learn more at discover.com/creditcard. Limitations do apply. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jake. Back to the school board meeting from yesterday and David Bryant's presentation about the still outstanding and many denied elements of the claims for coverage for Hurricane Sally the school board has incurred, something to the tune of $500,000 to maybe $1 million, something like that. And basically, you know, FEMA's just, it's being worse than ever is what he's saying. And he's like the expert. He's been doing this for a long time, okay? At one point, I think he made the comment like, I probably know the FEMA rules better than most of the FEMA guys. You know, I'm not making this stuff up. They're being very uncooperative.
You know, traditionally what happens is they issue some sort of denial, a determination memo that says, look, we don't agree with this many dollars. And then at that point, they'll obligate the dollars that there's not really any disagreement on. And then you'll argue over the minor amount. And I have seen them come back and say, oh, well, in addition to that minor amount, we're also going to go back and take some more. I've seen them do that. But in this case, they didn't obligate anything. They just said, no, while it's an appeal, we're just going to hold on to it. And we're not going to do anything. And that's unusual. I tried to ask why the change, because it's never been that way. You know, this is $1 million.
And again, but for our school, it's not going to make or break the school district, but it's still $1 million, right? That's a lot. And he says, look, the basic problem here is that they spend so much money processing claims that it's easier for them to say no, say no, say no, and then to actually spend the money to process the claim. And then, of course, to issue the claim, both, right? Both are problematic for them.
You know, FEMA spends a lot of money on processing a project, you know, tens of thousands of dollars just by processing a project. And they really like to force things through as quickly as they can. And so I've had to repeat to them over and over again. I said, look, you know, this amount of money isn't going to make or break our district. And so we would rather wait on everything that we're entitled to than accept a portion of what we're entitled to quickly. And so that sometimes isn't accepted very well because they want us to go away. You know, they want to close the project. They want us to close the storm. And, you know, we're not going to do that.
They want to get past it, have a case closure rate and spend less because they don't give you for the whole claim. And they're just, you know, again, just fighting, even when they're providing massive documentation. So the end result is he recommends.
We're at the spot now that I think that probably arbitration is the way to go. I sent you guys an example of an arbitration that is in the applicant was in the exact same spot that we're in. You know, they did all the same documentation, had all the same logs. I'm not sure which contractor they use, but the language is really similar to ours. So it's probably a standard for the contractors out there now. But, you know, in that arbitration board found, look, there is no requirement for pictures in your own standards. And they gave you thousands of pictures anyway. And you can't say just because you don't have a picture for this specific branch that's a total grounds for denial of funding.
Which, again, is part of the pattern of unreasonability that they're engaging in. So he says, look, it's not a ton of money, but it is enough money that it's worth doing this over.
This started out with a couple $100,000 in question, and now it looks like it's going to over $500,000 in question. And so that when you spend $1 million and 800 of that was on a contractor and they want to deny over 500 of that on the most documented storm and scope of work that we've ever had, that just doesn't sit well.
I'm with him. By the way, this guy sounds incredibly capable, and I'm so glad that he's working for the school district. Again, David Bryant, the internal auditor. So they voted 5-0 yesterday to pursue arbitration with FEMA, and obviously we'll see how that goes. But, man, it's just it's frustrating that people would have to go through that. And, you know, this is certainly not the first time that people have had trouble with the sluggishness and, you know, unresponsiveness of FEMA. But it's interesting to hear somebody in the government explain how difficult FEMA has become, particularly these days. 651 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, you want to work with a professional who's going to take care of you, get the job done, get you the best price, either high for selling or low for buying. Obviously, that's your goal. And, you know, you're probably going to do both. Typically, that's normal. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, they know how to do this. They have this whole pattern built around, you know, constant communication, answering your questions, returning your calls, your texts, whatever, and a system for selling your home that maximizes the likelihood of getting a good outcome. And, you know, she can work with the buyers all the time in terms of even, like, new builds. They're doing all kinds of things because inventory is high and demand has, you know, become a little bit squishy. So they'll buy down your points on, I mean, just stuff like that that she knows, and builders like working with her on this stuff. So even when you might think, well, it's a new build, I don't need a realtor. Yeah, but it might really benefit you to have a realtor. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, 723-9158.
Join the Great Southern Restaurant Group, home to the Fish House, Atlas Oyster House, Jackson's, Angelina's, and Five Sisters tomorrow on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 9. They'll be talking about Easter, Angelina's Supper Club, jazz at Jackson's, and other fun things you won't want to miss. That's all tomorrow at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel with Great Southern Restaurants.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Pensacola Opera's 41st season continues with Die Fledermaus, one of the most well-known and beloved German operettas of all time, presented in English. Prepare to pop the bubbly with the party of the season at the Sanger Theater March 15th and 17th. Die Fledermaus. Performance includes an elaborate masquerade ball alive with concealed identities and non-stop laughs. Tickets start at just $25. Get your tickets online at PensacolaOpera.com or call 850-433-6737.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services. Advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
Local experts share their expertise on the Pensacola Expert Panel. It's Pep Talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Gallon gas, 336. Florida is 331. It's terrible. Mississippi is 290. California is 484. If you are in Navarre, the Thumberland Farms has 303 to the east, 303 at the CEFCO up 87, or 303 west at the Walmart. Prices have gone up just a little bit since yesterday. 309 at the Circle K in Tiger Point, 319 in Gulf Breeze proper, 303 at the Raceway in Milton. Let's see, the Walmart in Pea Ridge is not telling me its price, but I think you can find 303 a little bit down the road at the Daybreak Market on 98 or on Highway 90. 305 at the Raceway if you wait in Pace for just a minute. 302 on 9 Mile at the Walmart, and then coming in from the southwest side, you got 306 at the Shell at Cervantes. 654 here on News Radio 92.3. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Wyoming lawmakers have passed a bill that would add regulations to surgical and chemical abortions to the state's last remaining abortion clinic. The new bill would reclassify abortion clinics as ambulatory surgical centers. That would require doctors who perform abortions to be licensed and add criminal penalties for violations. The oldest known person in the world just turned 117. Maria Brañas Mireya celebrated that birthday at a care home in Spain. She was born in San Francisco in 1907. Her family returned to Spain in 1915. She's lived there ever since. And the New Jersey restaurant booth featured in HBO's Sopranos finale brought some big bucks at auction recently. You probably remember the booth, the burgundy one, yellow formica top. That's where Tony Soprano sat with his family before the final episode ended in 2007. Well, Holston's in Bloomfield, New Jersey, put it up for auction on eBay last week. They were hoping to get $10,000, but the booth, divider, and the plaque that read that reads "Reserved for the Sopranos" ended up going for $82,000. The restaurant plans to use the money for renovations.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Jake has got traffic on the fives.
Not seeing too much on our roadways this morning. No major accidents reported by FHP. We're still seeing some slowdown on Highway 98 eastbound. Once you get past the causeway in Navarre, stretching all the way past the Walmart now, heading past Whispering Pines Boulevard. Not seeing any accidents, just slow roll through there. And we do have reports of debris in the roadway getting over Escambia Bay on I-10 westbound. So if you're headed over there, over the water, just be careful. There might be something in the roadway blocking there. Otherwise, around town, we're looking good. Chase Street, Gregory Street, Garden Street, Palafox, all checking in clear. Highway 29 south through Cantonment is good. If you see anything out there slowing you down, let me know. Call or text 437-1620. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jake. Back to the school board meeting yesterday. There was a it was a sad note at the end of the school board meeting. Bill Slayton, after they had dealt with the issue of the FEMA challenges, made an announcement that I think caught everybody by surprise a little bit.
I don't know if you have seen, but a person that was near and dear to superintendent in my time at Tate High School, I'd let you be aware that Carl Madison has passed away last night. And very, very upsetting to hear what's going on. But someone that was very meaningful, not only to Tate High School, but I think single-handedly turned football around in Escambia County and Northwest Florida, because it wasn't very competitive and it wasn't very good. And then all of a sudden, everybody wanted a coach like that. So you'll remember the family in prayers. I think it will be appreciated.
Absolutely. All-time record of 326 wins, 129 losses, and 7 ties, making him Florida's second winningest coach in state history. P&J doing good reporting on this. Ben Grieco, the sports writer over there. And, of course, North Escambia also doing good coverage on and Channel 3. He took Tate to the state championship in 1980. And then he won 2 state championships, the Pine Forest in 87 and 88. The 88 team named the national champion by USA Today. I did not know that. I'm only lived here 10 years. I'm still learning all kinds of things. Only one of 7 coaches in Florida high school state history to win state titles with 2 different teams, Tate and Pine Forest. So pretty impressive, pretty big loss for the community. And he had come back to coach for a little while more recently. I mean, just, you know, as like an assistant coach, offensive coach, I think is what he was doing. So Coach Carl Madison passing away at the age of 93 on Sunday. Time now for future news when Jake and I tell you what's going to happen before it happens. It is Super Tuesday. Trump or Biden, or Trump or Haley. Yeah, Trump or Biden.
Yeah.
Trump or Haley.
Well, Trump.
Overwhelmingly.
But I'm
right?
thinking she stays in.
Oh, that sounds going to be my question. So you think she'll stay in after
yeah,
this?
Yeah, yeah. As long as she's got the money.
You know, there is truth to that. I think if she has the money, she'll stay in until she doesn't have any money. But at this point, it's hopeless after the ruling from the Supreme Court. I mean, that had to have been the thing she was hanging her hat on, was the chance that he gets ineligible declared for several of the ballots. House Bill 3, House Bill 1, will that pass both chambers and go to the governor?
Yes.
Will he sign it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he will. It will. Will it make any difference?
No.
Maybe a little.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3. WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.